The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2011 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2011. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the Internet. If you would like to find out more about the work of ACCS, please visit our website at www.accsedu.org. To order additional talks from this conference, please visit the ACCS website and click on Conferences. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
All right, I'm going to be giving you the mother's perspective on raising writers. My son, Nate, as it turns out, he is has written a series for children called 100 Cupboards, Dot on the Cannon Table, and Lee Pike Ridge for Random House, and then Notes from the Tilt-A-Whirl that Nelson has published. So he is certainly a writer. And then my youngest daughter, Rachel, has just published her first book called Loving the Little Years. So I'm qualified, I guess, to talk about raising writers. And my other daughter, Becca, is a fantastic writer, and I assume her time will come. She's busy doing other things right now. But so Doug and I have raised some storytellers. We did not do this on purpose. We did not set out with that as a goal. And I don't think a parent really should set that as a goal specifically. Our goal was to raise godly children, just like yours. That obviously is the central goal. And we wanted to equip them to do whatever God would call them to do. But we did not specifically set out trying to figure out a good way to raise some writers. And I don't think parents should do that necessarily any more than you'd want to raise your son to be a pitcher or your daughter to be a model or, you know, just to select a career for them and try to push them into it. Obviously, we wanted to raise children who would love God, and we wanted to glorify God as we did it. I have on your outline, Marry the Right Man. This is kind of an inside joke, but I'll tell you what the joke is. When I was in college, I was converted after my junior year. I'd been raised in a God-fearing home, but I really was not a Christian inside and out. And I was converted after my junior year, and I was an English lit major. But even before I was converted, I remember, I went through a phase of saying I would never marry anybody for any reason. Marriage would be terrible. But then I said I did want to marry someone who could read and write. And I thought, boy, did God ever give me that times 10, times 100. But I just didn't have respect for men that I knew in college who could not read or write. I mean, seriously, just weren't readers and couldn't write or spell. So I just had that desire as a Christian, even before I was a Christian, but as a woman who loved words and books and reading, that I wanted to marry someone who felt the same way. So I did. Thanks be to God. But as I said, we weren't thinking about raising writers, but we were thinking about raising leaders. We wanted our children to grow up having something to say. And, of course, education was a big part of that. And as you know, my husband helped found Logos School for our children for Becca's kindergarten year. It opened in time for her kindergarten year. And now, this coming fall, we will have 11 grandchildren at Logos School, 11 of the 15 that we now have. And so all 15 will get there, God willing, in a few years. So that's been a big thing in our life. Logos School has been a huge thing. In fact, then when Becca was a senior in high school taking a course at the University of Idaho, we knew she didn't want to go there. We didn't want her to go there. And we had both gone there. And so that's when I remember getting out the pom-poms again and saying, Doug, hurry, you need to start a college. Go, team, go. And so he he did. And New St. Andrews College opened in time for her freshman year. She has been our guinea pig, and bless her. Bless her heart for that. But she was in the first class of New St. Andrews College with three other students. And so that's another story. But at any rate, certainly education was obviously something very important to us. We wanted to give our children a better education than we received, just like many of you. Although I see some of you, at least a couple, who have received. You've received a classical Christian education. That's what's really delighting us, is to see that second generation. So even at Logos, we have students. Well, our daughter Becca is one. She's teaching senior Brit Lit and junior classical Lit, and she went through K through 12, Logos School, and then New St. Andrews College, and now she's teaching there, and she has her own five children there. We wanted our children to grow up seeing the story around them, I know that, and enjoying the story around them, as well as reading good stories, of course. But in order to be a story writer, a storyteller, you have to be in a good story yourself. You have to see the story you are in and be in a story. So you have to be realistic about your children's abilities and gifts and cut with the grain. For example, our son Nate, who is now a writer and at this very moment is probably writing like crazy because he's under deadline for his next series, which is called Ashtown, that Random House is publishing with five books in it. But Nate loves sports. So he was in basketball. He was in lacrosse. He was, baseball, and he played football a couple of years for a nearby government school that had needed more players in a little teeny farming town. So he was playing sports. That was cutting with the grain. That was who he was and what he loved. And so we were encouraging him in his gifts. Becca loved sewing. So I would buy her mountains of fabric. And the other thing she loved was not using a pattern. So she would design things and cut up the fabric and make it. And she'd always say it was almost cute, almost. So she didn't wear those things. And I remember thinking, I'm not investing in her wardrobe, I'm investing in her. And so now, some of you may know this, but she has just sold a line of fabric to a big fabric distributor. And she just went to her first market where her line of fabric was launched. So she had to create some patterns. So I look back and say, see, that was good. And when I would think, what are we doing buying more fabric? You won't wear these. It was a good investment. So we were cutting with the grain with her. Rachel, our youngest, she loved cooking. We got her a cooking class. She loved kids. She did a preschool internship while she was at Logos, helping out in the preschool. And now she's written this book about the little preschool age kids in your home. So we were cutting with the grain. We were giving them opportunities to be in their own story and do what God was equipping them to do, and we were just facilitating those things. You can't, put in what God hasn't put in, obviously. You can't as parents. But we had this curiosity, Doug and I did, and we still do, to see what God was going to do with our kids. Isn't it fun to watch? And I wonder what God is going to do. He's going to do something. And I feel the same way now, like we see part of it unfolding. We're looking forward to the rest. And now with 15 grandchildren, we're very excited to see what they're going to be doing. The oldest is 13. The youngest, two youngest, are one. Two of our kids have one-year-olds. And then everything in between. So we know many of them are going to be leaders and writers, and some of them already are showing signs of both. So we're just excited to watch and cheer them on and pray for them and trust that God will do wonderful things through them. And he's promised us our children and our children's children, and we are invited to believe those promises, and we do. And we thank him, and we look forward to it. one of the things that is so important, and see, so we can look back and say, oh, yeah, that was good that we did that. But we didn't know at the time. It's just God was being gracious to us. And now we can look back and say, yes, we see now what he was doing. But one of the things that we see now is how important family loyalty is. We knew it was good at the time, but this really helps our children see, and our grandchildren now, who are the bad guys and who are the good guys? Who are our people? They have a strong sense of who's the protagonist in this story, who's the antagonist. And I don't mean just in the books they read, but in the world and all the stories going on around them. The ones they're involved in and the ones that they are just seeing. It's like, who are our people? Who are the protagonists? Who are the antagonists? And because of the family loyalty, of course, someone who is attacking dad when you're a little kid, that's one of the bad guys. That's a bad guy. But that's what family loyalty does. And they do have a strong sense of that that does come out in their interpretation of life as well as in their storytelling. The other thing, of course, we wanted to emphasize as Christian parents was just to love the Word, love God's Word, and love the author of language. And teaching them that God created language, isn't it wonderful? And because Doug and I both are naturally inclined to love words and stories, it was natural for us to pass that on to our children. So we were eager to teach them to read, which, of course, happened quickly, and then to give them the best sort of education we could provide. I do remember Rachel, when she was just four, she was the one who wasn't going to school, and we begged Logos to start a preschool for her because she just couldn't stand it another year. And so they did. They started a little preschool, not just for us. There were others. But she was the only one in there who could write her name and tie her shoes. I remember, but she's a super self-motivated child. And she would come home from preschool 3 mornings a week. And I'd try to get lunch going, no, I want to read. She was dying to read. So I would sit down with her and go through, you know, McGuffey's Readers or Hop on Pop. And she, I can still to this day just remember that child on my lap sounding out, up, on, up, you know, and going through this and feeling so like, now I'm one of the literate ones. I'm not the only one left out now. I can do it. So she was so determined. So we wanted to have lots of good books on our shelves. Of course, this is all stuff I know you do already. But we wanted them to be interested in the world and everything in it. Interested. Because if you're interested, you're interesting. Okay. And I have to say, not only were our children so interested in everything, but I see this magnified in my grandchildren now. Some of them are a little naturalist. They cannot go out the door without finding things and looking at things and bringing in live objects to show me. They're fascinated with everything. Rory is Nate's oldest, and it doesn't matter what is in my house. If it is a plant, he is over there looking at it. If it's a piece of fruit that he hasn't seen before, if it's an old coin, anything. He wants to know how it works. He wants to study it. He has questions. He's very fascinated with life and everything in it. And so, and he does live next door also to Doug's younger brother, Gordon, who got his PhD in turtles. That herpetology, I think. And his master's was in insects. So, I mean, he is a fantastic influence to have next door, and he takes some of the kids out to drag the pond and see what they get, you know, and look at all the creatures. So if you're interested in everything, you're interesting. You have things to talk about. You have things to say. So we're wanting to give our children, obviously, a grounding in the Word, in God's world, to see it all as a glory and as a fascinating place that we live in. And you can see that if you read Tilt-A-Whirl, for instance, you'll see a lot of that coming out in Nate's writing. Obviously, the Bible is the most important book in your home. It certainly wasn't in our home, and our kids were marinated in it. They truly were. Nate went through a phase where we put the Bible on tape on every night when he went to bed in his room, and he would just play until it ran out and he'd be asleep. He was just hearing God's word. Once in a while, he would holler from his room. And this is back when he was probably 5, 6 years old. Doug would especially enjoy this because he'd say, hey, how come it says in one place that Judas hung himself and another place that he fell down and his guts spilled out? You know, so he was listening and just absorbing it and taking it in and asking questions, and sometimes hard questions. So we gave them the scripture in all different forms. I used to read to Nate every day after kindergarten. We had the Children's Picture Bible, I think it is. It's cartoons. It was all cartoons, but oh, he loved it. You know, that was good stuff. So every day after kindergarten, I just sit down and read a bit to him, and we just read through that whole thing together. He found one for his kids. He tracked one down because his fell apart years and years ago. So we gave it to them, you know, in many forms, not only at church and around the table where Doug was reading Bible stories to them, that sort of thing. It was just a natural feature of our home. And, of course, the word is taken seriously at Logos School. They're hearing it from other people, from their teachers, and being read to at school. So they grew up in this environment of books everywhere, especially God's word. And in our family, we took his word seriously. We insisted on obedience and not compromise, and in putting things right and making amends and seeking forgiveness and receiving it. So the other funny resource, maybe funny to you, was P.G. Woodhouse. And I don't know how old Becca was when she first started reading P.G. Woodhouse, but she'd go to the library and come home with a stack of them and pound through them and go on to another pile. He is hilarious, as you know, if you've read any Woodhouse, but he also has many biblical allusions. His stories are saturated with scripture in unexpected ways. And I remember one episode where Doug and I were trying to remember, we think it's Jael, wife of Heber, came up and she knew who that character was, not because she'd read it in her Bible, but because of something she'd read in a P.G. Woodhouse. So you never know. You never know how it will get in. But we believe, and we taught our children, that writing was a way to imitate God. You know, he has written our story, and so when we're writing, we're imitating him. He's given us this ability. It's a good thing. Hearing stories, writing stories, he's written the most important story, so we're imitating him, which is good when we're telling and writing stories. When Doug's father went on an around-the-world trip, I think our children were probably in the... I don't remember when it was. They were young. I think Nate was about 5. But we went over, after Doug's dad got home, we went over to his house, and he gathered us all together to tell us about his trip. And he gave us a blow-by-blow account. And he's an evangelist, so he had gone on this world, across, around the world trip, connecting with missionaries he knew and evangelizing. So he had some great stories. When we went home, when we went out the door, I remember on the way home, Nate piped up from the back seat and he said, "When I grow up, I'm going to tell everybody about my trip." So he wanted to tell stories from a pretty young age. Now, we filled up shelves with books, and sometimes they weren't really interested in all the books we were bringing home. I remember Nate was probably, again, 8 to 10 years old now, maybe even 11, in that range. And he was, you know, my children, if they didn't have a book to read, would sometimes sort of storm around the house, like trying to find a good book to read. So I pulled out King Solomon's Mines for Nate. No, he did not want to read that. I said, "Let me tell you, it is very exciting. You will love this." Nope, don't want to read it. Okay, fine, you don't have to read it. And then he must have found something. And then the next time that he was sort of storming around looking for a book, it's like, "Nate, you would love King Solomon's Mines. You should read it." "No, I don't want to read it." Well, eventually, he read it. And of course, after the first page, you cannot put that book down. And I noticed in one of his books, he refers to King Solomon's mind as part of the stories in his mind that really were exciting for boys. And so I look back on that with a little bit of triumph, you know. Yes, I got him to read that one. But you can't force it. But I had read it, and it is something, you know, that's why I was recommending it. I had enjoyed it so much. Also, we wanted our kids to learn how to hate some stories, where they'd put a book down and say, that was awful. That was terrible. We want to allow your children to do that, in fact, teach them to do that. And so we would have conversations like, well, what was wrong with that book? Why did you hate it? Doug and I were trying to remember. Doug thought it was Babbitt, maybe, that Nate had read in sixth grade or something. Hated it, despised that book. But Doug would talk to him about those. He, in particular, would have strong opinions about what made a good story and what didn't. And so they would have discussions, and Doug would ask him, say, well, what would you do differently? How would you make it a better story? And they would discuss that. So I, of course, looking back on that, we see that as something that must have helped equip and prepare him to be a writer. The competition I put on here, movies and video games. Well, remember, movies are stories. Movies are stories. So, of course, we want to be selective, just like we are with the books, but we want to talk about the story again. Well, what'd you think of it? Well, what was wrong with it? And we do tend to be, I don't know, critical seems like a nasty word, but we tend to be critical when it comes to reading and movie watching. What was wrong with that thing? Why? How could that character have been better? Why wasn't that character a sympathetic character? What made you dislike that? How could it have been better? And I think video games, you know, certainly when we were raising our children, we did not have the competition of Facebook or texting. We just didn't have that. And I have to say, I'm glad, but my own children are going to have to figure that out with their kids. And I'm sure they will. Video games, we didn't prohibit, but they were sort of new. I mean, we had the Pac-Man. Anybody remember that? It was pretty exciting stuff, I will tell you that. And our kids loved it. But, of course, we did limit the time. It's just like giving them candy or something, a little bit. It's great. But we didn't let any of them become addicted to it. We limited that. I don't think it's all bad. Certainly there are video games that are horrible that you wouldn't want your kids to go near. But that's out of my zone. I don't know that. But those things aren't necessarily, especially the movies, aren't necessarily a bad competition for their writing. It may help them to be better writers if they see some movies. The other thing to help raise a writer is just love words yourself and all those crazy grammar rules and laws. You don't have to know them all, but have a dictionary and acquaint your kids with the dictionary. My kids still have me proof their work. My girls write on my blog, our blog, the Femina Girls blog, and they'll say, Mom, I just put up a text, put up a post. Will you go over it real quick and fix anything you see? So I still have that job of editing, and I love that. And when Nate is writing, he still will come over or call Doug and hash things out with him. He gets his character in a pickle of some kind, and he's trying to figure out the best way to do the next thing, and they have long discussions about it. So we want to be a resource for them, and we're happy when we can. But teaching your kids, you know, the dictionary is a marvelous tool, and I know there's one online. You just click, and you got it. But a dictionary actually has a lot of information that you should show your kids. Take them on a tour through the dictionary. I used to do that when I taught 7th and 8th grade English. We take a tour of the dictionary, and you'd be surprised how much information is in there besides just definitions of words. You have to use rules to write, and even the rules have some funny stories behind them. So if you can, investigate some of that background, particularly you English teachers, get the background stories on some of our funny rules. They're odd. And there are books written that just tell you these stories. Doug is a real collector of books about words. So we have shelves and shelves of books about words and about writing at home. So we have a great resource at home and this kind of thing. And there's funny books like Eat Shoots and Leaves. Have any of you read that? That are a lot of fun to read and to read out loud. Tricky to read out loud because of the spelling. You know, so many of the jokes are punctuation and so forth. But have those sorts of things as part of loving reading and loving writing, some of those stories. And read authors who break the rules. I'm still teaching at Logos. I teach high school lit now. But I'll tell the students, this is the way you must do it. When you're really good at it, you understand commas, well, then you may leave it out on purpose for a reason, for a good reason. But you can't until you know what you're doing. If you're breaking a rule on purpose, okay. But you won't do that in my class. But maybe someday. But read the authors who do break the rules and then talk about it and enjoy it. Love the red pen I put on here. Well, within reason, I do love my red pen. I think that we have to be kind with it, though, right? We have to be kind with that red pen. I think if I put red pen on the page and then my students just see the grade and throw it away, all my red pen is worthless. But if I insist that they go back and make all those corrections, they actually learn something and my labor pays off. With my own kids, I did proof a lot of their stuff at home before they turned it in. And I didn't rewrite it for them, certainly not. And I do remember one time Nate writing something pretty late at night in high school. And he showed it to me in the morning, and I knew he had put it off to the last minute. I knew it. But I was sort of disappointed that it was so good. Because I was wanting, you know, to say, see, you should start sooner or whatever. And, of course, it came back with an A on it, and I thought, ah. But he had a lot of natural ability, and so that he used it. But love the red pen. And I would just say here, as tempting as it is, don't showcase your kids' work too soon. Now, I have a 5-year-old granddaughter, Lena, who writes actually some beautiful little poems and stories. That's different. I might show that to somebody or put it on my fridge. And 8-year-old Belle, she also has written some sweet little poems and illustrated them and whatnot. But what I'm talking about here is like my 8th grade son has written a 3-volume work. Would you like to hear it? Would you like to read it? It's like, no, thank you. I wouldn't. Just be careful about showcasing their work too early. Give them time. Don't embarrass them. Save that. Don't brag about it quite too much, as tempting as it is. But do encourage them. There's a place like in the family where you can read it, right? Read it to one another, encourage them. But maybe don't take it on the road just yet. Give them time. Encourage them to rewrite bits of it. Say, you know, this is so good right here, this line. I bet you could rework that to get the meter right or to this paragraph, whatever. But when they're little, you can do that. When they're older, you want to let maybe someone else have that job of making them redo it. Either way, you want to encourage your kids to work and let their teachers make them work and cheer those teachers on when they make your kids work. As teachers, many of you are, don't you love that when a parent thanks you? It's wonderful. So be that kind of parent. One thing I'd like to insert here is about journaling. I know journaling is a really popular thing to do. I would just have a caution here. If you journal, I'm speaking about your children, but maybe you can take this to heart too. When my kids were little and they would write in a journal or a diary or something, I always said, do not write something that you don't want other people to read. Never write something that you don't want other people to read. Haven't you heard the stories? You know, someone found the diary and something bad happened. So because that's what will happen. And even in lit, when we're reading lit and we're reading diaries or journals, I think some of these things we wish they hadn't written. Maybe we didn't want to know that about them. And it's too bad someone preserved that. It's not necessary. So I would encourage you, if you're having your kids journal, don't write about yourself. say, write stories, things that happen, things you see. Don't write about all your inner feelings every day and pour out all your grievances against other people in your journal. Just write. Don't write about yourself and your feelings. That is going to cause a child to become very introspective. And the stories are out there. They're about other people. Write about other people. Now, I'm not saying that you should never allow your child to write anything about himself, especially if he's in the story. But I hope you understand my point. Sometimes there's too much emphasis on getting it all out, whatever you're feeling and thinking. And it's like, sometimes it's not healthy. It'd be better for us to deal with it, teach our children not to write all their bitterness down, or their anger or whatever, but to take it to the Lord and let's get it worked out there. And unless you want to burn it right after you write it, that might work. I remember one woman I got to share the gospel with. She was getting, she was paying for counseling at the university. She was paying a lot of money and wasn't getting helped. And so I don't remember how she got connected with me, but one of the things I told her to do was make a list of all of her bitternesses, because we had talked a very long time anyway. And then I said, and then pray through each one, ask God to forgive you for harboring that, and then throw it away, burn it. This has nothing to do with raising writers. It's just a silly story I'm inserting here. But anyway, she called me and said, you know, I did that, and then I wadded that thing up, and I threw it in the fireplace, and it would not burn. It would not catch. But it finally did. But at any rate, I'm just saying, teach your children to be responsible with what they write down, and certainly on the computer and emails and Facebook and texting and all these things, to be very careful. You might hit the wrong button. And that thing may go far and wide, as we know. So encourage them to write things down, to look at things. I guess you could say we promoted seeing and saying. Seeing and saying. See it and then say it. Write it. When I was teaching creative writing at Logos, I forbid the girls to write romances. And I forbid the boys from writing, you know, war stories. They've never been in a romance or in a war. I said, write about things you know about. And some of the best writing I've seen from my students had to do with their families. Their families. And writing about the characters in their family that they loved. Some of the best writing, you know, when they know it. So see it first and then write about it. Don't write about somebody else's story or about that movie you saw. We don't want to hear that. We want you to tell us stories. One of the things our children did constantly, and they still do, is tell stories. When they were growing up around the dinner table, that was the time. Every day, without fail, everybody had a story, and Doug usually had to say, okay, wait a minute, wait, everybody. Okay, you'll be first, and then you're second, and then you're third. Because they all were just chafing at the bit to tell us the stories of their day. And they still cannot go anywhere without coming back with a story. And some of the stories that are so vivid in my mind, I wasn't even there for them, but I heard the kids tell me about them. Like the guy in the three-piece suit holding his coffee cup on roller skates going down the steepest hill in Moscow. You know, I just remember hearing about that story, and I wasn't even there. So there was always news and stories, and that's, we made time for that. Sometimes we were at the table for ages. And then when they were young, when they were little, Doug would read to them for hours on end after dinner. And I can remember when we had a 2, 4, and a 6-year-old, I can remember the picture in my mind of Doug lying on the couch, three little kids sitting on top of him, and he's reading The Lord of the Rings to them. And Nate, in those battle scenes, his cheeks would just get fiery red. I mean, they were just hot. I could go over and touch him, and he's on fire. You know, so the story grip, he was so into it at age 4. I don't know how many times Doug read Narnia out loud to our children. I have no idea. You saw he wrote the book, What I Learned in Narnia. His parents were reading it to him as soon as it was coming out, really literally within a year or two. As the books were coming out, they were reading them as kids. and being read to and reading them themselves. So our children heard Narnia, and then we had the tapes also, and they played those. So they were steeped in it. One time, I had one of the younger kids in the tub, and they were probably 2 years old enough where you, well, however old, I don't remember, old enough where you could run to the kitchen and back, and they weren't going to drown, you know. But I stuck Becca there and said, I'll be right back. Why don't you tell a Narnia story? Well, she said, okay. And because we'd been listening to the tape, she just started in, and I had no idea. This kid had memorized the whole thing. She just kept going and going, word for word, on and on. So it's amazing what they're taking in. But I just never called on her to say, would you please repeat back to me one of the Narnia stories? But that day, it came in very handy. So we were reading to them. Sometimes Doug would read until he was hoarse, because it was especially something like Lord of the Rings. Be like, you can't stop now. You must keep going. One time, the kids and I went along while he was teaching a men's conference, which wasn't our normal thing to do, but we were all there together. So during the conference, the kids and I were sitting, we were someplace where there were sand dunes, I know that, and I read them Lorna Doone till I was hoarse. But that's just how, that was the entertainment. That's what we did. And we loved it. And we spent our time together was telling stories and reading stories. Discipline transfers. I say here, writers don't just fall out of the sky. I better wrap it up here quickly. They don't just fall out of the sky. Or no, I have till 10 after, don't I? Okay. Thank you. But discipline in other areas transfers. In other words, that's what I mean. Nate was playing football with two-a-day practices in high school. He was playing basketball. We had to get up mighty early for practice. He was playing lacrosse, which is pretty brutal. And so all that discipline and baseball, all the hours I spent on the bench, watching the bleachers, rather, not the bench, the bleachers, watching him play in sports, that all the discipline of sports transfers over into writing. Okay? So it's not one or the other. And I just see him now, when he's under deadline, he's writing till 2 a.m. And the discipline required to just keep on going, and writing isn't easy work. It's hard work. So don't assume that if you're going to have a writer, you better steer them away from things like sports. No, I think it just gives them more stories. It broadens their horizon because, like I said before, writers have to see and be before they have something to say. And you want to give them something to say. So the discipline of getting hurt, of having to get up at the crack of dawn, of having to work hard, all those things are good. Don't bring up a recluse and think you're going to have a great writer. Get them out in the world and getting to know people. And some of the good stories our kids have are about the neighborhood kids in the backyard and some of the, run-ins with the unbelieving neighbor who would always get sent home when he started using bad language. You know, just we didn't isolate them or keep them back from ever having exposure to other people and other ways of life and so forth. But we were careful, obviously. But don't bring up a recluse. Be a good audience. Listen. Listen. And I know when they're little and they have a story to tell you, it's tempting to just give them like half an ear and keep busy doing what you're doing, but to actually stop and listen and hear it. Or to say, okay, well, good story, but now I have our grandson Judah likes to tell me, if he has seen a movie, he wants to tell me the entire plot of the movie and act out some of it and repeat some of the lines and so forth. So, of course, there's a limit, but listen to your kids. Don't frustrate them. Listen to their stories and read their stories. Be a good audience. Enjoy their stories. And then I say, be patient. You know, it's going to take years for them to produce good writing. It takes 12 years to get through school. So don't burden them with heavy expectations. Of course not. You want them to view it as something they get to do, not something they have to do. It's just if they would enjoy that, then now I'm not talking about when you're making them write in class, but just as parents, when they're out of class and they're wanting to write for the fun of it, you want to be a good audience, but you don't want to require a certain load of work from them. You don't want to kill the joy of it. The exercise pays off. All that writing. Nate could tell you a lot of stories about people who have talked to him about writing, and they'll say, oh, I want to be a writer. They'll say, well, what are you writing? Well, nothing right now. I just want to be that. And he would say, well, get writing. Write. Throw it away. Pitch it. And write some more. But don't just say, I'm going to be a writer. I want to be a writer, but I'm not really writing right now. It's like saying, I want to be a football player, but no, I haven't tried out for the team, and no, I haven't ever participated. It's just something I want to do. You know, you have to get going and get doing it and let your kids just do it and throw it away and start over. Let them do that. And then have those discussions about the characters in the stories they're reading and what's good about it, what's not good about it. And be a cheerleader. This is the part that I feel is really easy for me. I love seeing my children do what God is calling them to do. I love that. And people will say, I just told my kids this the other night, said, you don't know how often people come up to me and say, where did your kids get all this talent? I'd be like, are you creative or is Doug creative? I'm like, how did they get this? And my kids laugh. They said, no, really they do? And I said, yeah. I say, you and Doug, how did you have kids like this? And they said, oh, just say, Mom, just say that we're all adopted. But I love being a cheerleader. And I do remember telling my son when he was pretty little, and I prayed for him that he would grow up to be a mighty man of God. I remember that. I prayed for him. And whatever it was he was going to do, I trusted it would be something powerful, something that would change the world. That's what my prayer was. And I remember telling him, I said, you will someday, you'll be teaching me. And I will be sitting listening to you. And that came to pass many years ago. And it's such a delight as a mother, and it's very humbling as a mother. I don't know where these kids came from. I can't take the credit and say, oh, don't you know? I'm just a fountain of creativity. No, I can't take the credit as much as I would love to, but God is faithful. And so Doug and I look back and see, yes, we can look back and say, yeah, that was a good thing we did. We didn't know it was going to go this way, but God blessed it. And it's easy to be a fan now, and it was fun being a fan all those years, even for the little things they were producing, or for my granddaughters writing poems now. It's easy to be the cheerleader. Be your kid's biggest fan. That truly is the easy part and the fun part. But all those years of giving them your ear and of listening to them and teaching them faithfully will pay off, and you'll be learning so much from them. I will read my kids' writing, whether it is a blog post or a book, and be stunned and think, oh, I really like that line. It's like, oh, my son said that. My daughter said that. And it is truly a blessing and a humbling thing to see. And so I just encourage all of you. I hope there's been something helpful. It's a mystery.